Travel is great, but planning for travel can be time-consuming and difficult. That's where One Travel comes in. With One Travel, you'll find everything you need to book the perfect trip. Flights, hotels, cars, transportation, it's all right there. With One Travel, you can book online, via app, or even pick up the phone and talk to a travel advisor ready to help you make your selections. Visit onetravel.com/music or call 855-437-2154. Plan it, book it, live it. One Travel.
At Rural First, we're the leader in rural construction loans because we don't work here. We work out here. We live rural, which means we know just what you need to build rural. Our dedicated team of loan specialists works with you throughout the construction process. And with our digital tool, you can manage your project all in one place. That's how Rural First gets you closer to what matters. Rural First is a registered trademark of Farm Credit Mid-America. NMLS 407249. Equal housing lender. Loan subject to approval and eligibility. Other terms and conditions may apply. Visit ruralfirst.com for more details.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 34 of the Go Get Outside podcast. This is your host, Jason Milligan. Welcome back, welcome aboard. On today's show, we will be talking to Kat Carney and Craig Kinsley. I'm sure all of you out there have friends, couples that are friends, where some of them, you look at them and you think, I don't know why these people date or how they fit together. And then you have the other side where you have those people where you think, wow, these two people are awesome, and together they're even more awesome, and they fit together perfectly. Well, that is how I would describe Kat Carney and Craig Kinsley. They're two benevolent, intelligent people who make a really awesome team. They complement each other very well, and I don't know if this means anything, but they both have K and C as initials swapped. So Kat Carney KC and Craig Kinsley CK. I don't know what that means, but I'm sure the Illuminati is somehow involved. So why are we talking to Kat and Craig today? They are both Kenyaneers. That's how I met them. But then they also have these cool other activities that they each participate in. Kat is a climber and a photographer who does a lot of nature and outdoor photography. And Craig is an Olympic javelin thrower. I don't know about the rest of you, but javelin throwers don't come in and out of my life a lot. Craig is the only one I've ever known, so I thought it'd be pretty interesting to have him on the show to talk about that. The two of them are also planning this month to embark on a big road trip where they're going to live out of a suburban. So we spent some time talking about that. We spent time talking about sandboarding, about hitchhiking, about lucky breaks and odd coincidences in life. So come with me back in time to earlier this year where I sat down with both of them at their place in San Diego and had this conversation.
I'm Kat Carney. I'm a photographer, climber, canyoneer, and outdoor lover.
And a Craig lover.
And a Craig lover. That's true.
I'm Craig Kinsley. I'm a canyon lover, a javelin lover, and a cat lover.
Cat meow.
The animal cat, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're talking about.
Yeah, he's not talking about you.
Okay, that's what I thought. Just making sure. Man. Just to be clear.
Man, so narcissistic. Some people, they find the outdoors when they're older. Some people find it when sure. they're little bitty babies. Some people grow up in an outdoors family. Some people grow up in a family that's afraid of everything. So what were you guys?
Well, I grew up in Kansas. So it's not like super well known for being in the outdoors world.
It's well known for one thing.
Wheat.
I wasn't even going to say that.
Flatlands?
No, say the Wizard of Oz.
The Wizard of Oz. I guess not. Basketball? Should I keep going?
Yeah, then tell us all of the things we should know about Kansas. So wheat, basketball, and what was the other thing?
Flatlands.
And flatlands.
Yeah, most people, what
sunflowers.
They say about...
Well, what about tornadoes?
Tornadoes,
sure.
Yeah. Tornadoes and the Wizard of Oz, that's what people
most
think
people,
of.
Most people, what they say to me is, oh, I've driven through Kansas before. I said, do you happen to be on the I-70? And they're like, yeah, it was like terrible and boring and straight. And I was so happy when we got to Colorado. I'm like, all right.
That sounds like a great childhood.
Yeah, I grew up in Kansas with four brothers.
Where are you in the spectrum of ages?
I'm the second oldest.
Okay, so you got to boss around the younger two.
The younger three. So there's the oldest, there's me.
Oh, right, four brothers, right, four brothers. Not four
me.
Of you total, yeah. four brothers. So you're a family
okay,
of five.
It's not a math pod quite.
It's not, although occasionally it turns into one.
Yeah, so I grew up with four brothers, and my parents, every chance we got, well, like mostly in the summers, to go on vacation, we would go to Colorado, we would go to Wyoming, South Dakota, and they just wanted to hike. Really?
So you just named all of the states that no one else has been to.
I know.
So you left Kansas, a state that's only known for the Wizard of Oz, to visit the other states that no one else can tell you anything about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like because I grew up in Kansas, I got to go to all of the states, really, that no one else goes to because they feel like there's not a reason to. I have family in Oklahoma, I have family in Nebraska. We went to Missouri for vacation all the time for Lake of the Ozarks.
Arkansas
there.
Too, right?
Arkansas, yeah. People are like, wait, what is there? Actually, a lot of cool things.
Actually, there is a lot of cool stuff in Arkansas because we went to Arkansas when I was a kid, and that was the first time I ever experienced like mountains and caves and all these things.
There
having
are tons
come from
of
the swamplands.
The cave system there is really cool. So yeah, that's what they just wanted to hike, and it was a cheap vacation. And so they were like, let's pile everyone into our GMC van and go camp and or stay at like a little log cabin or something for a week or 2 weeks and just hike everything that we can in the area.
And fish.
They're so into fishing. Last year, I think they caught over 100 pounds worth of, no, it was way over 100 pounds worth of fish because they caught 100 pounds worth of fish in San Diego alone. So
Mr. and Mrs. Carney will just sit out there all day. And Mrs. Carney will reel in every single
she
fish.
She will catch everything. They'll sit out there for 3 days straight, and my mom will catch all the fish. And my dad is just like, why is she catching all the fish?
So they leave when the lake or the river is empty? They're like, well, the fish are gone. I guess we'll
when
move to the next
spot. When they catch
their
quota, usually. When you get a license, you have a quota. And they're like, okay, we caught our five fish for the day. And then they go eat them that night.
Did you catch the fishing bug, the fishing passion?
I did and didn't. So, like, I haven't fished in several years now, but...
So that's a
so no.
Yeah. That's absolutely
a resounding no.
Oh, I'm totally into fishing. I just only do it once a decade.
Yeah, no, I think I'll do it more in the future. Right now, I'm, like, into doing things where I move a lot. And, like, fishing, often you're sitting there for long periods of time, which I find difficult.
That was a very diplomatic way of explaining why you don't want to do it. I like to do things where you move a lot. Whereas what you could have said is, I don't want to be a lazy-ass fisherman that just sits around.
No, but I did fish a lot when I was a kid because we, about 20 minutes outside of town, we had a cabin on the Ninisca River. We used to go out there like all summer. We'd spend the whole summer out there. I would just sit there and catch fish and go swimming and then catch some more fish and then go swimming again. So I did do it a lot growing up, but I don't anymore. So I guess it's not a bug that I've caught.
How did you end up in California?
The long version or the short version?
The medium version.
The most interesting version.
Okay. So I met Craig in the summer of 2008 when we were working seasonal jobs on Lake Powell. We started dating the next summer when we worked together in Denali National Park, another seasonal job.
What sort of seasonal jobs are we talking about?
I was a waitress. And
hotel.
He was in the hotel.
I was busing, so she was making like three times as much as me. It was terrible.
Oh, so you were...
He wasn't 21 yet.
So you were the sugar mama.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
He wasn't 21 yet, so he wasn't allowed to be a server, which was pretty funny.
That's interesting because... So I grew up in Louisiana, and I was waiting tables, I think when I was about 18. They had just changed the drinking age to 21, but you could still serve alcohol at 18. You just couldn't purchase it.
I mean, we were working mostly breakfast, but it was an Aramark, which is that operator... at the national parks. They like didn't allow people to serve until they were 21, which really sucked for little 18-year-old Craig.
Well, yeah, you were 19 and you were 20 in Alaska, and they wouldn't let you, even though he was close.
Yeah, they changed the drinking age at 21 in Louisiana a few months before I turned 18. A friend of mine was 20, and then suddenly for 1 year was not allowed to buy alcohol, even though he had been able to buy alcohol when he was younger.
Yeah, that's so strange. That must have been a strange... I started drinking 2 years ago, and now I can't drink this single year, and then I can drink again.
Right. It was ridiculous.
If they were going to do that at some point, that would...
It has to affect somebody, yeah. I suppose. Yeah. But it also seems like maybe they could grandfather people in, but then people would have to do math, extra math. Yeah, there's already enough confusion.
Wait, no, I'm grandfathered, and I promise. I swear I am.
They could just put like a little sticker of a beer mug on your driver's license.
He's okay. Okay, so we started dating in Alaska, and then he went back to school because he's 2 years younger than me, and I had graduated.
Oh, cradle robber.
Yes.
I was like...
I like the younger men.
Yeah, her name's Kat, but really she's a cougar.
I had just graduated from college, and another friend and I that his actually friend from like childhood was up there, and he had also graduated from college at the time, and we were like, we have no idea what we're doing with our lives. We don't have jobs anymore after the season is over. So we decided to hitchhike from Alaska to... our original plan was Rhode Island, but we made it to San Francisco and thought, forget it, we're buying a plane ticket to New York.
How long did that take?
It took, 3 weeks, I think? It took us about 3 weeks to get from Denali to San Francisco.
Which is almost halfway.
Yeah, so how long a distance would the average person take you?
It depended on the day. Like when we actually took the ferry from Haines to Bellingham because we thought, oh, then let's take the ferry. It's like a novelty. And so we got to Bellingham. We just stood outside of the... we caught a ride from Fairbanks down to Haines. And then we took the ferry from Haines to Bellingham. And when we were in Bellingham, we just stood outside of like all the people driving their cars off the ferry with cardboard signs saying Portland or like Portland area or something like that. And someone was like, oh, I saw you guys making those signs on the ferry. And I thought if I saw you there, I would pick you up.
So I thought Joe's sign said need money for beer.
I don't know, but I believe that would be true. No, but he did not. So this guy picked us up, and I was in the back of... Joe was sitting in the front seat. I was in the back of his van, which was... he's a plumber, so it was like one of those like child molester vans with no with no windows in the back. My mom calls me on my cell phone. She's like, "Where are you?" I'm like, "In the back of some guy's van."
Oh, wow, you told her.
No windows. Oh yeah, she was like having heart attacks every night. And
what a terrible daughter. I know. But you do as you lie and you say, oh, we're on the bus on the way there.
I know.
She wanted you to lie to her, by the way.
Yeah.
She didn't want you to tell the truth.
I know. My poor mother. My dad was not worried at all because he hitchhiked all over the place in his youth. So he was like, they'll be okay. Although, you know, maybe that's just what he said, but my mom was seriously concerned. So he took us all the way through the state of Washington, actually, and down to... he didn't get us to Portland. He dropped us on some small town on the Pacific Coast Highway in Oregon. And so we decided, all right, we're going down the Pacific Coast Highway then, because we didn't have like a route that we needed to go or anything. We just...
And Craig at this time is like 8 years old, carrying him in a backpack.
Yeah.
Craig is actually a junior in college in Rhode Island, which is my final destination to at least visit him for a while.
When did you need to be back in school?
I needed to be back for September. So we had just worked the summer season in Denali, and so I took off in, you know, August, and
you really thought you were going to get there?
Oh no, I wasn't with them.
Craig didn't go.
Oh, he didn't.
It was
go.
My friend Joe.
Oh,
yeah.
So I flew back to New York. I'm from outside New York City, and I went to school in Rhode Island. So I was back in school at the time, and it was her and one of my best friends from growing up who I had been in Alaska with.
Okay, I was thinking it was the three of you. So it was just
no,
the two.
No, just the two of them.
So he was sensible enough to take an airplane.
There was no way I was going to get... yeah, there was no way.
He had like a time schedule to be on, and Joe and I had zero time schedule.
They just didn't have a flight.
So we were somewhere in Oregon, and then we caught a series of shorter rides. Like up until that point, we'd had really long rides, and then the ferry ride in the middle. So everything had gone like pretty much flawlessly. And
you're like, this is going to be so easy and
so fun. And especially in Alaska, it's like a hitchhiking culture where it's just so easy to get picked up by people. It's like what they do. And
I think there's like a law in the winter that if you see a hitchhiker, you have to pick them up because there's like a good chance they're going to die. Like if their car broke down on the side of the road and it's cold out, I mean, you can just die. So
yeah. So that kind of carries over to the summer then. And people are just like, well, this
you
is
get
what
picked
we
up
do.
By
we
normal people in Alaska, not so much in the lower 48.
A professor at University of Alaska Fairbanks picked us up once, for instance, when we were hitchhiking back from Fairbanks down to Healy, which is close to where we were working at the time. So yeah, normal people totally pick you up. In the lower 48, not so much. We found out pretty quickly. We got a series of short rides. There was this guy named Lucky who picked us up in a converted 19.
I bet that was his God-given name at birth.
He was a deadhead. And he picked us up in his converted 1979 Greyhound bus. He had converted it into an RV. Someone, his wife or girlfriend or friend, was passed out on the couch on the RV. Lucky was drinking beer just straight out of the bottle while driving this thing. No cover whatsoever, just drinking beer while driving. He found out my friend Joe had been a bus driver for the Denali National Park System, and he was like, oh, you can drive this thing. Well, he had been, I should correct myself, he was a shuttle driver, not like a big bus, just a regular shuttle. And this thing has air brakes, and you need like a CDL to drive it. So Joe gets behind the wheel, and he like manages for probably about an hour and a half, and then he's just like, you know, we're on the winding.
You were way safer with him driving.
I think so, because he wasn't driving. I think so. That's true. We're on the Pacific Coast Highway, so there's like a sheer drop on one side of the road at a lot of these like winding passages. So Joe, at one point, there's a big pullout, and he just pulls over, and he's like, I think we have to get out here, Lucky. Meanwhile, I'm in the back watching a movie with like this woman passed out right next to me on the couch.
Was it a good movie?
I think so. I don't remember what it was, honestly.
Is it Home Alone 3?
Yeah.
Or something exciting?
Oh,
like
that.
It was an exciting movie. I was just like, yes, I get to relax for a little while. Joe's driving this thing. He pulls over and he's like, thanks for the ride. We're gonna go ahead and go now. And he's like, okay. Are you sure you guys don't want to stay longer? I can take you like across the Oregon-California border. We're like, we're good, thanks. The next person is closer into the evening by this time. And the next person that picks us up is this, I don't honestly remember this guy's name, but he was a former drug addict alcoholic who was clean now and felt like he needed to tell everyone about like being sober and stuff. So he was actually a really nice guy, and he was headed to his family reunion in the Oregon sand dunes. And so he took us to his family reunion in the Oregon sand dunes. And we went off-roading with some of his family members. They fed us dinner. I actually still have I gave it to Craig, but a belt buckle that his like brother-in-law made out of metal of like one of the bridges in Oregon that we went across.
And we have one with all these like another belt buckle with all these astronauts and like a space shuttle on it.
He was an artisan. He was awesome. And
it was like super professional. Super professional.
And so we stayed at his like sister-in-law's house that night or something like that, and they were such nice people. Like they fed us, they talked to us. I think they were shocked to learn that we were like normal people and not like addicted to something and like going crazy.
Oh, right, because you showed up with their recently sober
relative.
And they were hitchhikers too.
Right. So and we were hitchhikers. So they were like, well, you're just bringing these random people to our family reunion at the Oregon Sand Dunes. Like, what are you doing? And so we kind of felt the same way. Like, and we were like, well, you know, what else are we going to do? So we accepted, and we actually had a great time at their family reunion.
Did you join their family?
We did not join the family.
That was your opportunity to marry one of the family.
I know. I should have just
Craig. You missed that opportunity.
What was I thinking? Over the next few days, we caught a series of rides down the coast. We made it to Arcata, California. Have you ever been to Arcata? It's an interesting
place. Like Central California, right?
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. I've never been there, though.
It's actually north. It's north of San Francisco, so it's northern.
Oh, so it's further north.
Mm-hmm, it's okay. Northern California. We were looking for a place to camp because along the way, we were camping everywhere we could. We had camping gear with us. We didn't stay in any hotels, I don't think. We stayed at people's houses sometimes if they offered. So we were walking around the town square, which there's just like tons of people hanging out, just like playing music or whatever in the town square in Arcata. And so we were walking around and we said, is there like a campground or like a spot outside of town? We asked this woman who was walking down. She was like, no, there's like no campground. We're like, can we just pitch a tent somewhere? She goes, well, in the forest outside of town. And Joe goes, is there anywhere we should maybe be weary of? And she goes, well, the forest. So we head into the forest. And
because it's haunted? Is that what
yes, it's a haunted forest. Like a commune in the forest. There's like all of these squatters sitting around like doing drugs mostly in the forest. And that's
so
why.
What you're teaching everyone is if you want to meet a lot of people involved in drugs or used to be involved in drugs,
yes,
then hitchhike.
You should hitchhike without a doubt.
So at this point, I end up being on the phone with her. I'm just sitting around in my dorm room, like all comfy in college, and I just get a call and, yeah, where are you guys? Oh, we're in Arcata. We're walking through the forest. Oh, you're going to camp there? Yeah, but we can just hear people around, and they told us
there
not to come here.
There were people everywhere.
And there's just like, they're just drug addicts all over the place, and they're just, I could just hear them all, and I'm like, what are you guys doing? Yeah, we got here from this ride with this alcoholic, and I'm like, whoa, man.
This sounds a lot like a trip I had to Vancouver when we stayed on East Hastings Street, except it wasn't in the forest, it was in the city.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But that's a story for another time.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think in Arcata, we kind of decided like...
You're like, I want to move to California now because this is amazing.
And that's how we got to California.
That is how we got. And that's how we ended up here. We just kept going all the way down to San Diego. No, I'm just kidding. There are many years in between there and now. So we ended up just flying to the East Coast once we got to San Francisco. Craig, I started telling the story of how I met Craig, and then we went down that rabbit hole. And I'm there, like I said, there's a long version and a short version.
Was that the short version?
No, that was like getting into the medium length version at least. So I went back to Kansas and ended up being a volleyball coach and photojournalist. And after 2 years of doing that, I moved to Spain. So Craig and I broke up for a short period of that time, or a period of that time. And then we got back together, and I told him, hey, well, I already have plans to move to Spain, so I'm going to Spain. So I moved to Spain. We were together, I guess, the whole time that I was in Spain, and he happened to make the Olympics that year also, which was convenient because I was in Spain and the Olympics were in London. So the first time I saw him in a year was in London when he walked out into the Olympic Stadium and threw the javelin in the Olympics. And then I got to see him after that, obviously. And so when we came back to the United States after that, because I had left Spain after a year, he said, well, I'm moving to San Diego to the Olympic Training Center. And I said, again, this seems to be a thing for me, but I don't have any plans. So like San Diego seems to be...
You're like, don't worry, I know some drunks that'll get me there.
San Diego seems to be a great place. And I had obviously learned to speak Spanish, and I wanted to continue living in a place where I could do that and just kind of work and do photography and live in a fun, active place. So San Diego fit that bill perfectly, and I had no qualms about coming. And then finally living in the same place, because we had, you know, been not living in the same place for like, what, 3 years at that point? Something like that.
And so we got out here in January of 2013 and been here ever since.
So you threw something out just kind of nonchalantly that probably most people listening were like, wait, what? Like, oh, yeah, he got in the Olympics throwing the javelin. Since we glossed past that, I think we'll backtrack a little
important.
Bit. Yeah, yeah.
It's not important.
So, Craig, tell us about that. Probably most people listening don't know a lot of people who throw the javelin, period, much less Olympians who throw a javelin. I don't even know. What the hell is the right term? Is throw the javelin?
Yeah. Sorry, you nailed it. Okay. Yeah, it's very simple.
There's no like special terminology that you use?
Oh, no. No. It's really just throwing a stick as far as you can. So it's about as simple as it gets.
How do you go from little bitty Craig growing up outside of New York?
Yeah, I'm from Fairfield, Connecticut, so about an hour outside of New York City.
Everybody there throws javelins.
Everybody.
All the time. Long darts.
Yeah, well, people from California know nothing about it because they don't have it in high school. On the East Coast, well, actually, you know, Oregon, Washington both have it. Kansas has it. And then pretty much all the states in the Northeast have it, and a number of other states around the country. But, you know, a lot of them have outlawed it because they think that it's a safety hazard, which really isn't. You just have to look both ways. It's like...
It's outlawed?
It's
like sincerely outlawed, not just removed from the curriculum, but outlawed?
No, I don't know about outlawed. Outlawed from, I mean, I suppose that's the wrong word. But
okay.
It's not contested at high school track meets in most states. But anyway, it is all in the Northeast, so people kind of know about it in the Northeast. And so I was just a baseball and basketball player growing up. Ended up breaking my hand before my junior season of baseball, which was kind of the big... season. I caught a basketball like between two fingers and snapped one of the bones in my hand, like right before the baseball season. And I was really excited about that season because I was thinking if I had a good season, then maybe I could play in college somewhere. Probably, you know, not at a super high level. I was a much better fielder than hitter. But with a broken hand, you really can't swing a bat. A bunch of people had already, from the baseball team, had already quit for the track team. So I went out for the track team and started high jumping and hurdling with a cast on my hand. And then by the time it had healed up, I started like kind of, you can kind of grip a javelin with two fingers. So I had like, I guess my index and my thumb out, and I started throwing the javelin. And a buddy of mine who was on the baseball team had been approaching the school record at the time, and we both ended up surpassing the school record. It was kind of a perfect storm of having really good teammates and a really good coach.
What I really like about this story so far is it began with, I was playing basketball and broke my fingers, which ruined my dreams yeah. of becoming a baseball player.
Yep.
So instead, I'm going to try this other thing, which ultimately will lead me into being an Olympian.
Yeah.
Like that's a pretty good turn of events, I would say.
It just goes to show how much random luck there is involved in life. I could have been like a Division III baseball player, but I broke my hand and got lucky and ended up, you know, finding right. like the one thing in this world that I'm best at. So yeah, I got really, really lucky. Also just happened to have a really good coach and awesome teammates in high school, which, you know, I was able to excel. And by the end of my junior year, I remember there was one meet where I made a big jump and my coach said, well, I think you can start looking at whatever school you want. And I was like, what are you talking about? He said, well, this is a recruitable mark. And I remember starting to get, you know, letters from, which was just crazy to me because I was hoping to maybe like walk on to a baseball team. And all of a sudden I was like vying for a state championship in this thing that I didn't know anything about, but it was great. Ended up lucking out and going to Brown University to throw the javelin, and it's not really known for sports at all, but we had a really, really, really outrageously dedicated throws coach. And so we had a really like excellent and really solid team, probably like the best throws group in the Northeast, which isn't really saying much, but a really good, hardworking group of people. And at that point, my outdoor kind of life hadn't really even begun. I was kind of a late bloomer because I've just played baseball and basketball growing up.
Yeah, it sounds
like
you're more of a team sports.
Exactly, totally team sports person. And then I got really lucky again. It was just totally luck. Two of my best friends growing up lived down the street, Matt and Joe. Joe was a couple years older, the same one that ended up hitchhiking with Kat in the end. And he just took off with one of his crazy friends and said, we're going to work in Alaska after their probably freshman year in high school. Yeah, freshman year in college, excuse me. And so they took off and he came back and he was showing me all those photos. And I said, you're completely insane. Like, I had pictures of bears like up close. Like, do you have a zoom lens on that? And no, there's no zoom. And I thought he was totally crazy, but the pictures that they took were just like blew my mind. And so the next summer we all planned to go to Lake Powell. And it was right, that was after my freshman year of college. Joe actually ended up not being able to go, which was funny because he was kind of the ringleader. But I ended up going with his brother Matt out to Arizona, and that's where we met Kat.
So your life is a string of lucky coincidences.
Absolutely.
Basically.
I feel like, I don't know, who knows where I'd be if I hadn't been for those couple coincidences and lucky chances, because those have completely consumed my life since then. So
so his buddy's photos and his buddy got him to go do this seasonal work. Why did you do the seasonal work?
It's a similar reason, but the year before I told my friend Jana, like, we really need to go somewhere for the summer because I'm sick of being in Kansas all summer long. So she went to Lake Powell. This is the year before that she went to Lake Powell and worked there and loved it and had a great time. And I had to stay in Kansas to work because I didn't have any money. And I thought, like, I have a job here. I should probably keep it and work as much as possible. The next summer I was like, okay, I think I can go to Lake Powell this year. And she's like, well, don't you want to go somewhere else? I've like already been there. And I'm like, well, can we get jobs at Lake Powell?
I want to meet a guy.
No, I said, well, can we get jobs at
Lake
Powell?
She already had a boyfriend at that point.
That's what I need. I had a different
boyfriend. Oh, homewrecker. You're a homewrecker, right, Greg?
And she was like, yeah, I know we can get jobs there. I was like, great. I don't want to think about this. Let's just go. So that's how we ended up going. And I went back with her that summer. We drove out there. Yeah, and ended up meeting these guys. Who knew? Who knew at that time I was going to break up with my boyfriend?
Well, we didn't date at all.
We didn't date at all.
There was like absolutely nothing happened. We just became friends.
Why are you being so defensive?
Yeah. And then, so after that summer, we were really good friends. And he said, well, do you want to go to Alaska next summer? And I was like,
because Joe was being ringleader again and trying to get a group together to go back to Alaska where he had originally gone. And then he missed out on Lake Powell the next summer. And so he said, we're going back to Alaska. We actually went. We all went. Kat just wanted to see the Northern Lights. She wanted to go to some place in Michigan. I was like, forget Michigan, let's go to Alaska.
I had seen pictures of the Northern Lights and was like, whatever, I don't care where we go, let's just go somewhere we can see those. And I did. The second to last day that I was in Alaska, I got to see the Northern Lights, which is pretty cool. Okay, so I have to keep telling Craig's story because he... Okay, so you won a state championship, right?
Well,
yeah, how do you end up in the Olympics?
So,
in case anyone at home is going to plot,
then he won an NCAA championship.
Well, yeah, it was, you know, it was one thing, you know, naturally followed the next. I just kept throwing and really lucked out when I got to college that I had a really awesome, super knowledgeable coach. I had a series of injuries my freshman year and It was really strange. So I had a series of injuries, and then I still managed, after coming out of all these injuries, to win the Ivy League championship with the worst winning mark in the history of the Ivy League championships.
Oh, congratulations.
So again, I know. It was under 200 feet. So this was like, there were tons of high schoolers who would have smoked the whole field on that day. So it was a pretty, another really strange, lucky event. And that was the last year where the system worked that if you won the conference championship, you automatically moved on to the NCAA regional meet. So my freshman year, when I hadn't really improved that much, I snuck through and won this meet with the worst performance of any winner and ended up going to the NCAA regional meet where I got to actually see, you know, the best guy in the country throw and a lot of the other top guys. And I remember I had won the conference championship and then I lost by 60 feet at the NCAA regional. But I remember seeing it and thinking, well, you know, I feel like I can do that. So it was just a huge thing for me to see the guys who were throwing at a significantly higher level and just have that feeling that, you know, I could probably do that.
Do you have a record? The furthest I've ever thrown is this far, and then that record stays with you?
Yeah, exactly.
And what is your record?
Oh, it's 270 feet on the money. So 270 and 0 inches. So that's my best, which is right at 90 yards for most.
Do you know what the world record is? I imagine you probably do.
Yeah, so the world record is, it kind of hurts to talk about your personal record and then talk about the world record because statistically, the javelin world, I have to give a preface so I don't sound like a shitty thrower. Statistically, the javelin record is the strongest record in all of track and field. And part of that is because wind conditions are largely a factor. And also the guy who holds the world record also holds the top 10 longest throws, and the longest throw after the world record holder is 5 meters under, so like 16 feet short. So the best thing to look at really is, I'll tell you the world record. The world record is 323 feet, which is just, nobody is anywhere near that or has ever been in history.
It doesn't make you sound as terrible. Like,
well, I mean,
when
it's
you
not...
preface it as like, is he going to say 600 feet or something?
It's twice as far.
But the best, I think the best number to look at is the Olympic record, which is just around 298 feet. So that's the longest anybody's thrown in Olympic history. So in the stadium, that's kind of accounting for wind conditions because there's usually not a big tailwind when you have a big stadium at your back. So at least I like to say, I mean, I like to compare myself to the Olympic record so that I don't sound bad. It's very selfish.
I guess it's fair.
And so anyway, I just lucked out and was able to see this field of throwers, just have exposure to the guys who were above me. And the next year I made a jump from, I was able to stay healthy all year and jumped from 199 feet to 241 feet and ended up coming in third at the NCAA championship. So I took 17th at that regional meet my freshman year and then ended up taking second at it to the guy who won it the year before, who still smoked me. And then we went to NCAA championships for the whole country and took third. So that was big. Still got smoked by the top guy, but I just had a long streak of really good performances at big meets, which you start to realize as your career goes on does not always follow you through your whole career. I kind of thought it would, but sometimes injuries can make the magic stop. So I almost wish I could go back and to realize that there's more luck involved in it than you think. There almost always is. So I wish I could go back and kind of appreciate it more. But anyway, ended up coming in third that year. The next year, I think I went in, I don't know, I think I was ranked fifth or sixth, and ended up winning the NCAA championship, which was awesome.
So then does someone approach you and say, hey, we think you should try out for the Olympics, or is that something you decide personally?
Yeah, so you pretty much decide it. You decide it personally. It's a very objective sport, so you can kind of look and see how far do I throw and how far is the Olympic standard. So if you're anywhere near the Olympic standard, people tend to stick around in the sport unless they have something else they want to do, or they've had a lot of injuries, or they don't have any money. Those are the typical reasons that people would hang it up. But after I graduated, I had a kind of frustrating and subpar and injury-riddled senior year, and that was 2011. So I had one more year before the Olympic Games, and I knew. I don't know if anyone else knew, but I knew that I could do it. Maybe Kat knew. Yeah, Kat's pointing at herself. Thanks. Up top.
I called his parents 6 months before the Olympic trials even. I was like, so are you guys buying your tickets yet? And do we have a place to stay? And and his mom was like, well, we're going to see if he makes the team first. And I was like, what? Of course he's making the team.
So I was a pretty big long shot. My longest throw up to that point was 78 meters. It's pretty much all in meters. So we're going to switch over to meters. Because I don't want to calculate.
About 250, 255, 260, somewhere around there.
Yeah, exactly. So about
See,
two,
I can do math on 250 this podcast.
And change. Yeah, so 250 and change, 255. And the Olympic standard was about 269 at the time, 268. And so that's a long way away. And a lot of people, some people who would be kind of in my position with that PR would maybe have hung it up. But it was kind of, a toss-up. Should you stick with it? Should you not? And I ended up improving and hitting the Olympic qualifier 2 weeks before the Olympic trials. So it was just getting in by the skin of my teeth, and then managed to take third at the Olympic trials, which punched my ticket. So it was actually a really strange meet. You have to both meet the Olympic standard, which is just a mark. So it's 268 feet or whatever that is. So you have to do that at some point leading up to it in the year leading up to the games. And then you also have to be in the top three at the Olympic trials. But it was really strange for the javelin, because you have to be one of the top three competitors that has the Olympic A standard. So it was a weird meet, because the number one and number two ended up being just shy of the Olympic standard. So number three, four, and five at the Olympic trials all had the Olympic standard. So we ended up going, which was really strange.
That sounds a little bit like luck again.
Oh, it sounds a whole lot like luck. Although I did take third, so I had punched my ticket no matter what. The fourth and fifth guys, yeah. That was a lot of luck.
Is there a javelin season? Is this something you do year round, or is this something that you only do at a certain part of the year?
Yeah, so the track season is, there's an indoor track season, and we don't have javelin indoors. That would be
dangerous.
That would be dangerous. And then so the outdoor season starts in the spring, and then for high school it usually runs into the early summer, and then in college it runs into midsummer, and then at the professional level it runs into the late summer and early fall. So
and during that season, are you just training all the time?
Yeah, a typical training year for me will start in October, and you train from October through March is kind of off season. The amount of time that you're putting in is pretty much identical to what you would do during the season, maybe even more. And then in the season from, March, April through September, you compete.
So does that mean that throwing the javelin is your profession? Is that how you make a living?
Yeah, it's my full-time gig right now, which is pretty wild that you can throw a stick and make enough to get by, but enough to get by is all I make, so. But it's good. It's really good.
And you are a photographer, correct? Is that your profession?
So I mean, I've been doing it part-time for the last 10 years, but the last 3 years seriously. I actually work for a nonprofit that supports small businesses in San Diego, down the street from here.
Not as a photographer.
No, not as a photographer, just as my title's associate director, whatever that means. But so that's what I do full time. And then I've been doing outdoor photography on the side, like I said, for the last several years, and finally starting to form it into a business the last 3 years.
How did you get into the outdoor photography? Or just photography in general?
Photography in general I got into in high school. I was on the yearbook and the newspaper staff and college.
Apparently this is just going to fly over us.
Should I wait?
This is the slowest plane of all time.
we should be fine.
I think there's a police plane that sometimes, I don't know if someone's missing or something. Oh, it's a blimp. It's the blimp.
Oh, it's a blimp. Blimp?
It's the Goodyear blimp.
Is it for the PGA?
Maybe, although... Yeah, it's gotta be.
So we did a short little canyon, the three of us, earlier this morning, and it just happens to start right next to a golf course where apparently a PGA game...
Torrey Pines for anybody who cares.
Yeah, apparently they were having a PGA tournament that day, and we had to kind of walk across our grounds a little bit to get down into our canyon.
Just walked across
So we suspect this blimp maybe has something to do with that. Oh, it is a Goodyear blimp, too, yeah. All right, that explains why it was so ridiculously
long.
What
hole we walked across.
It was 13.
It was a 13.
It was a lucky 13.
Very good.
All right, you're...
So I got into photography in high school. I was on the newspaper and yearbook staff. In college, I was on the newspaper staff. I studied journalism, but I got really into photojournalism and the storytelling aspect and imagery of it during college. So it was after my junior year that I went to Lake Powell, and then after my senior year that I went to Alaska, and I had a DSLR that I had bought when I was the year before, probably. And so I took it to Arizona and Alaska, and I just fell in love with capturing the landscapes of the places, because the Southwest and Alaska, you can't really, I mean, those are two of the most beautiful places I've ever seen. So that's where I fell in love with like capturing the outdoors. And then, you know, we were backpacking every single chance we got in Alaska. We were on the lake every chance we got in Arizona. And so I just took it everywhere, and in slot canyons and all of these places, just so I could show my friends and family, like, hey, this is what it looks like in Arizona. This is what it looks like in Alaska. And tell stories that way about, like, so I could remember, this is what happened that summer. These are the people that I met and the places that I went. And then I got a job after Alaska coaching volleyball. And so I was in a tiny town in southeast Kansas called Chinook, Kansas. I was this...
Like the salmon?
Is that a type of salmon?
Yeah, Chinook salmon.
Oh, it's a Chinook.
Oh, Chinook. Yeah, okay, then never mind.
Chinook salmon.
Cut this part out, yeah. so I look cool.
Yeah, so I was the assistant volleyball coach at a community college that doesn't pay very much. And so I also got a full-time job as a reporter and photographer for the paper. So I was kind of doing all of that stuff at once, which...
Was there a lot of interesting news to photograph?
There was so much interesting stuff, believe it or not. I loved that job because you got to do something different every single day. Like one morning I woke up and got to take a powered parachute ride from Iola, Kansas to Chinook, Kansas. So like this guy took me up. It's basically a go-kart with a big, I don't know,
fan
on the back.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a powered paraglider, right?
Yeah, exactly. And we were, you know, we took off as the sun was rising, and he would go up
and
higher.
You did some fertilization of the fields, right?
No, we did not do that. We saw like deer. Oh, I did. I puked off the side twice. That's what he's talking about.
And that was the best crop we'd had in years.
Oh, God. I get air sick and seasick easily. I didn't think to take a Dramamine. I was like, oh, yeah, powered parachute. Because when I fly like on a regular plane, I don't get sick. But I didn't think like I'm going to be looking in my camera viewfinder and we're going to be spinning around and like going all over the place. I still had a great time. And my poor pilot, he was like, are you okay?
Did you puke on him?
No, I didn't puke. It went back into the fan and just like exploded out the back, I think. So he probably had to clean his fan off.
So there was probably somebody down on the ground. Who's like, oh, is it raining? What's going on?
I think the deer just might have been showered in puke that morning. So I got to do things like that. And, you know, like a bunch of interesting, I got to learn a lot about farming and, you know, small town life and government and how that sort of stuff runs, which I thought was really interesting. It might not interest everyone.
Well, that's kind of the cool thing about just journalism in general is your job is to learn about a bunch of different things.
Everything. Yeah. You get to know something, a little something about everything that you cover, and you have to like kind of become knowledgeable about it, at least for the day. So I thought that was fun. So that's when I really started. I mean, I was shooting every day at that time, like small town life stories and stuff. You know, up until that point, like I had taken my camera out for like beautiful sunrises and sunsets, and I love shooting the stars and I love shooting lightning and stuff like that. But I got to put it all together and, you know, have my camera out for like a solid 4 to 5 hours a day. I kind of just like never put it down since then. Yeah. After that, like I said, I went to Spain and then we traveled for a while when we got back, and then ended up in San Diego. And San Diego happens to be like the perfect place to specialize in shooting in the outdoors, because there's surf, there's mountains, there's climbing, there's everything that you can, canyons, obviously, everything that you want to do. You can take a camera with you. And so that's what I've been doing.
And you said it's a part-time profession. So what does that mean? How are you, How are you making money doing it?
So I shoot for brands. I've shot for an outdoor retailer, like a store. Actually, Instagram has been a huge tool to connect me with people. So a lot of people have found me through there and just said, hey, we want you to shoot. I was publishing Outdoor Research's catalog because of that. And I've shot for like Lifestraw and just a bunch of brands who are like, hey, we really like your work. Can you do something for us? And so it's been a great way to like put it out there without me having to like go solicit individually every single company that I might want to shoot for. It's like a great place for a bunch of people to find you all at once. So that's how I've like really started shooting for companies. And
it seems like that's kind of the best method these days, because if you send your portfolio somewhere, it's quite likely they won't even look at it. Whereas if they find you through someone who's linked to you through something like Instagram, and then they say, oh, well, she has a whole lot of people following her pictures, and oh, she has a whole lot of work here, that actually probably does way more for you than just providing them with a really good portfolio.
I think so. I think social media has been huge, and I didn't. Facebook's kind of pay to play now if you have a business page for it. I don't know how it was like several years ago, maybe when you were posting and it got out to all of the people who had liked your page, but now it doesn't do that. Instagram is still the only platform that every time you post, it goes out to all of the people who follow you without you having to pay to promote it. So right now I can get out to over 11,000 people, which is like huge for a photographer who just wants to like show people, hey, like this is my work.
Best place to put your gallery.
Yeah.
And it's free.
Do you do a lot of hot pictures of your boyfriend throwing javelins shirtless?
There are no pictures. There are pictures of him shirtless on my Instagram. So go check that out if you want to see
that. I've got those saved.
I don't think I have any pictures of you throwing the javelin on it.
You need to sell sex when you got the beautiful outdoor vistas.
That's true.
Yeah, but when you can have both.
That's true.
Bam.
That's true.
Should my next image be Craig throwing shirtless in a beautiful outdoor vista then?
Absolutely.
I think that'll be the next.
Then you hit all of it.
Stay tuned for that post.
We'll just have to get some beautiful women and get some booties in all the pictures.
Oh my God.
Everybody. You'll triple your followers.
I think I know
week.
What beach you guys should shoot on based on where we were this morning. It was a nude beach, by the way. For those that are listening who don't get our inside joke, that means people are naked on the beach, in case you don't know what a nude beach is. So part of the reason I was asking about your professions and if you make money doing the photography and the javelin throwing is because multiple times today, the two of you mentioned that you're going to be moving into, I guess it's an SUV. Is it a truck, an SUV? What does it count as?
It's a suburban.
Suburban.
Okay, suburban. So the two of you are talking about moving into a suburban for a year?
Yep.
So you're going to leave this nice house you're sharing with someone else and move into a suburban. What's the plan there?
Well, the plan, I mean, it's 2016 now, so it's the Olympic year again. So since we moved out here, I've been training at the training center in Chula Vista, south of San Diego, just in preparation for round two of 2016 Rio Olympics. So
are you guaranteed to be in the Olympics, or you're trying out now?
Yeah, everybody's a hopeful all over again, even if you're the world record holder.
When will you know?
The Olympic trials are in July in Eugene, Oregon. So everybody finds out on that day, on the day that they compete, whether or not they're in it. And they take the people who are hot, like 5 or 6 weeks before the games. And that's how you put together the team for track and field.
I thought the people who are hot are the people that are best looking with their shirts off. Right.
Yeah. whoever's having the best seat, whoever competes on the day and has the Olympic standard makes the team, and then
it's great to know the Olympics is based entirely around sexiness.
Yes.
Yeah.
100%.
So true. The games come up in August, and then we're planning. And so Kat is kind of planning on kind of moving along from her job that she's holding now and launching her photo business full time. So the way we look at it is, she's been out here backing me up while I've been pursuing my dream, and after the Olympics, we've been preparing this vehicle to suit as a little photo studio, 4x4 photo studio, so we can take a big trip and launch our outdoor photography full time.
Does your current employer know that you're planning to leave?
No.
when would you like to tell them?
Scott, if you're listening,
this is a different cat we're talking about. Early May.
Okay, so I'll make sure this podcast comes out after that.
Yeah. So it can come out after that, but also, I've Yeah, it's not because he doesn't have Facebook anyways, or whatever media you're going to put it on. He's probably not going to find it because he's like, but yeah, no, I'm telling him in May, and then I'm going to spend the whole summer in San Diego shooting and freelancing and like preparing everything. And then hopefully going, I'm definitely going to the Olympic trials and then going to the Olympics in Rio too. So, but yeah, he doesn't know right now, but also it's not, I mean, I'm going to tell him. And again, if
I just want to make sure he finds out from you and not from my podcast.
That's so sad and guilty. It's okay.
That makes sense. I'm going to tell him, I swear.
I'll make sure before I release this that I've verified that you've let him know.
That I've let him know. Yeah.
So a year, is that the plan? Live in it for a year?
Yeah. So we're thinking travel over the course of the year. I guess, well, the year. So starting in the fall, leading up to the next fall, I'll start applying for jobs as a coach, because I would love to coach at the collegiate level. So hopefully we can find a Division I coaching gig that's in a mountain town or something like that. That might be too much to ask for. So really we're just looking for any place with a decent outdoor community. But yeah, I'm looking forward to starting my kind of next step after throwing. So I really want to coach.
Any particular places you guys are trying to go on the road trip, or are you just open to whatever?
Well, we've got a loose itinerary, but we're thinking in the fall, the Colorado Plateau, spend a lot of time in Escalante and kind of southern Utah, hitting a lot of the canyons that we haven't had a chance to go to. It's so funny. Zion lies between all the other canyons in southern Utah and San Diego. So when you're driving and then you kind of hit Zion, even if you have plans to do other things, you just kind of end up staying there.
I know what you're talking about, because I've been to Zion a bunch of times. I still haven't made it to Escalante,
exactly.
North Wash,
you
and all those other.
You just kind of stop areas. Because there's so much to do in Zion, you really don't need to go further.
And it's just such an Eden, beautiful, and
perfect.
It sucks you right in. So who knows, maybe it'll suck us in for like 2 or 3 months, but we're hoping that we can see some other things in the area. So kind of the Colorado Plateau in the fall, and then hopefully Baja for maybe a month or so, or however long. In the winter when it starts to get a little bit cold.
We want to learn how to get good at surfing.
Yeah. I don't know how to surf. She can kind of surf. Yeah. She can surf, but we want to see if we can get good in like a month or something. I don't know.
Yeah, what kind of gear are you going to be bringing with you? Surfboards, clearly.
We'll take surfboard for the surfing portion of it and then probably dump them at Candy's house in her shed.
We'll have all our climbing and canyon gear in the car the whole time, and then probably buy some surfboards and off Craigslist and sell them again on Craigslist. And then after Baja, we have...
Do you like Craigslist just because it shares a name with you?
Yeah, it's his list.
It is my list. I get a little bit of kickback from that.
Are there a lot of used javelins available on Craigslist?
Oh, there are so many. Although, you actually can find... If you're in the Northeast, you might actually be able to find something. Maybe Oregon or Washington. Yeah, and then we just met a buddy, actually, at this... where we last saw you,
Kevin,
Jason.
Kevin, if you're listening,
in
thank you.
Death Valley. Did you meet Kevin from
Salt Lake?
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, so Kevin from Salt Lake, who we went sandboarding with, is the man, and he, we were telling him about our plans and how we were gonna, for the winter, we wanted to kind of hole up in a ski town and bum around for the winter, and he said, come live in Salt Lake City with me. And so we said, okay, I think you need to understand that we're the people who will certainly take you up on this offer. So he said, no, seriously, come out there. So now we already have it planned. We're already looking at what our best chances, what our best choices for season passes are in the Little Cottonwood, Big Cottonwood Canyon area. So
yeah, so let's take a short diversion here, because you mentioned sandboarding, which you both tried, what, 2 weeks ago in Death Valley?
Mm, yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
It's wonderful.
It was so much fun.
So we went out there.
Well, maybe some people don't know what sandboarding is.
So it's pretty much surfing, snowboarding or surfing on sand dunes. And so we went out to these dunes called the Mesquite Dunes. I think they're the only ones you're allowed to actually sandboard on in Death Valley National Park. But man, it would be nice if you could do it on all of them, because Death Valley has 6 different valleys and each one has a whole different set of sand dunes, and some of them are much bigger than the Mesquite Dunes. But these ones are probably 100 feet high or so. Mm-hmm. But some really good steeps. And we tried on this tiny little hill. It was maybe 15 feet long, and you just can't break free of the friction. And so we were kind of thinking, is this going to be terrible? You can like stand in your bindings on the snowboard and just not move. Once we got up to the top of the biggest dune,
well,
Kevin went first.
We were like, okay, clearly we need to go down the steepest thing we can find.
And Kevin's the guy who actually knows how to snowboard. So Kevin jumps on, and all these kids are around. There's some kids sledding, and Kevin jumps on this snowboard, and it's like a tipping point. Once you break the friction, you can really go. And Kevin is just ripping down towards the bottom, and the sand dunes are really soft towards the top, and then we didn't realize we're looking down. We didn't even look at the runout, and the runout, it just got flat really quick and actually started going up the next dune really quick. So Kevin just wipes out when he hits the bottom, and he hits the ground, and he doesn't sink in. It's like it was pretty much like hitting pavement. So boom, because the bottom was just such hard pack sand, and he hit really, really hard. But he popped right up, and we were up to the top of the biggest dune, and he was ready to go again. And
he was fine, but he made me go down first, down the biggest dune. Yeah. And then
it was fantastic.
When you get towards the bottom, the sand becomes very hard, actually. And so if you're going to fall, you want to fall in the steep part, because then you sort of just like cartwheel down on this nice soft sand. But if you fall at the bottom, it's like rock hard.
Yeah. It's like just falling through gravel at that point.
Yeah, well, not bottom, even it's gravel. Like, it's just like,
it's like a dirt trail. Like,
yeah, it might as well be like a packed dirt trail. Road. Right. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's pretty hard at the bottom, but it's awesome. I mean, at first it's weird. It's like, it's kind of like skiing really slushy powder, or riding really slushy powder. You can't really get an edge, but you can kind of like slush through it, but it's just so heavy.
Yeah, it's really heavy. Awesome. And at first we thought, oh, we just need to point straight down, and you know, you just can go straight because you're not going to get enough speed. And then once we got enough speed, we figured, oh shoot, maybe we should try and carve, because I'm going really fast right now. And so towards the end, we did actually start carving, and Kevin did it pretty well carving down. And it's kind of weird just because it feels so heavy. It's like so much harder to turn your board and your body than like on snow, where you kind of just float from one edge to the other. So yeah, but
both of you are snowboarders.
I snowboard and he skis.
Okay, so
I'd never snowboarded before. So
you both kind of have an idea what you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ish, yeah.
Yeah, and Kevin both snowboards and skis. So
we mostly just ran around. Well, you did a lot, but we mostly just ran around taking pictures of Kevin because he was the best one. I'm getting dagger eyes. Kat was ripping it up too.
So this is
Kat
an audio podcast. So if you'd like to communicate, you should use your mouth.
I got a lot of hand signals here.
Kat
was shredding too, but Kevin just kept these poses that he was hitting. He was just dragging his hand and getting sand spray behind the board. It was, I don't know. He was the MVP.
So he's not saying you weren't good at it. He's just saying you weren't posing properly.
I was just saying, okay. Kevin was like on point.
Yeah. He's just saying his sandboarding is more aesthetically
really
pleasing.
What happened was,
I had a
Craig
cartwheel though, a
sat
cartwheel
around
fall. That was good.
And Kevin and I were running up and down the dunes.
That's true.
Craig doesn't like doing
do
things that he gets could potentially get injured on, which makes sense because of the stick throwing
or
and whatnot.
At least he makes that excuse.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm just truly terrified.
But no, it was so much fun, and we thought we were going to go down the largest dune like one time, and then we'd be like too exhausted because it's hard walking around on those dunes. We ended up running up and down the dunes about
10 times a piece.
Yeah, 20 times total. We probably could have stayed there the entire day just sandboarding.
So you're glad that you went.
Yes.
Yeah, so if you ever go, don't forget to bring your snowboarding boots though.
Oh yeah. Kevin and I were putting on Craig's hiking boots in order to fit into the binding. So we would put on his boots, stuff socks into them so that they would fit, put on his hiking boots, and then put them in the bindings. Because otherwise,
it would have been a lot better if it was like a snug fit in the bindings.
Yeah,
so
definitely.
Bring your snowboarding boots.
Still fun.
Moving into the truck, the Suburban. When was it you said that's going to happen?
September.
September.
Are you going to document it along the way? I'm sure you're going to.
Yeah, definitely. So Craig has been awesome because I work a full-time job and am doing a lot of photo work. I don't have a ton of time to like figure out what car we're going to live in or like what things need to go in that car. So he's been doing all of that, and he did all the research for finding the Suburban or like in general what kind of car would be great for us to live in. And then he built the awning that's on top of the car and put on the what are those?
All kinds of random crap.
All kinds of random stuff, and he's ultimately going to do the whole build out of the car, the platform, and the solar system. And
oh, you're going to have solar power, huh?
Yeah.
And I'm assuming we're actually going to put the entire solar system.
You're going to put the solar system into the vehicle. That is going to be very impressive.
It is a Suburban, man.
So I'm assuming you're going to build some sort of bed in the back, and
yeah, build a bed and store everything underneath. Yeah, we got the awning on there. We're going to have a little kitchen table and all of our stove and all our pots, and we'll just kind of live like a normal life. It's just a bed on wheels.
Are you going to put all your stuff in storage in the meantime, or get rid of everything? Or
we don't really have much stuff, so
we don't own things.
We can't really fit everything we have into the Suburban, but it's kind of it'll be close. I think we'll give away some stuff and bring some stuff home.
What about Zeus? Your car.
This is a good question. I don't know what I'm going to do with Zeus yet. I could sell her or keep her.
We've got three cars now between two people. Yeah. It's kind of ridiculous.
We're definitely going to sell. I think we're going to sell Craig's car.
Yeah, I think so.
And then ultimately, we're going to need another car. We won't want to drive the Suburban around like as a day-to-day driver wherever we end up a year from now or a year and a half or however long we take.
So what you're telling me is you don't own a lot of things, but you own superfluous cars.
Yes. Yeah. That is correct.
Sounds about right.
So we are going to get rid of one or both of our personal cars and then just have the Suburban and or my car, I think.
I think she's afraid to get rid of her car.
Yeah, yes.
I'm kind of
she
sad.
Has an emotional attachment.
We both have emotional attachments. My guy's Vlad. Although if I sell him to a friend, then I'll feel okay about that.
But so. Zeus is also better than Vlad, so.
So if anybody's looking for a 2008 Volkswagen Rabbit with 97,000 miles, and you're going to take good care of him, his name's Vlad, give me a call.
Did you name him that because of Vlad the Impaler?
No, that's a good one, though. No,
because you
thinking
throw
of
a javelin,
names.
Which could impale people. And
we were thinking of V names, and we went with a Russian name for a German car. It didn't really make much sense, but...
Not a lot of sense.
It's okay. It just fit.
Yeah. No, but really, we should show you the room that we live in. It's a very small room with a closet that is maybe like, what, 2 by 3 feet or something like that. So we don't have that many clothes.
We're not stuff with
carabiners. Most of the stuff that we own is out with ropes and like carabiners and gear.
Yeah, we're trying to
gear.
Figure out how we're going to put all our ropes in this
like
car.
How do we fit all the ropes in the car?
Our ropes and our wetsuits. Yeah. Man, we could fill up a car with that shit.
Yeah.
How many javelins do you own?
I only own three javelins.
You ever throw it in the neighborhood here?
No. That would be a wild time. Throwing in public parks doesn't really work out.
I bet
too well.
You wouldn't end up in the Olympics if you started throwing your javelin around this neighborhood.
Yeah, might end up in prison.
And on that note, let's move into the end show information. You have an Instagram, we know that. I'm sure you're going to be documenting the trip when that happens well online. Let us know where we can find all that stuff, and if this guy exists online anywhere, where we can find his stuff.
I think it's more fun to follow. I think it's more fun to follow Kat. So definitely follow Cal on Instagram. My Instagram sucks. I don't really have much of a social media presence, but you can find results. The most important things will be the Olympic trials and then obviously the Olympic Games. So Olympic trials 2016 results will pop up sometime in July. But
so if you search for Craig Kinsley.
Craig Kinsley, yeah. Craig Kinsley javelin, that'll pop up.
And then lots of hot shirtless pics.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Fun fact.
No doubt.
Fun fact. He was... named what one of the hottest Olympic bodies on gay.net or something like that.
Sweet.
Yeah, compliments a compliment.
In 2012.
I'll make sure to link to that in the show notes.
I think the
I think there's a shirtless pic in there.
I think the title of the article was 50 bodies that we'd give a gold medal to.
I am absolutely going to find that, and that is going to be in the show notes. So if you're listening to this and you never go to the show notes, go check them out so that you can look at that article. So where will they find you?
Oh, my Instagram's at Kat Carney, KatCarney, just my name. And then I'm on Facebook, obviously, and I have a website, katcarneyphotography.com.
Do you sell any photographs?
I do sell pictures. I've been meaning to set up a store like on my website maybe I'll get it up in the next couple months or so.
it would be wise to have that available before September, I would think.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I will do that. It's on my to-do list. It's very long.
I know one of the things on your to-do list. Tell boss I'm quitting.
I was scared about that one. Yeah.
Do you want me to just send him the podcast?
You should just
say go to about 30, 40 minutes in and just listen for a few minutes.
Yeah. No, it will be said. I just have to get through. We have a special event at the end of April, and so I was going to tell him right after that because I didn't want to like freak him out before like the event happened. So
I'm going to send him this tonight in an email. Just that part of it.
I mean, I've told lots of people at this point, so it wouldn't surprise me if he found. I actually told his daughter that, you know, I wasn't going to be around forever. And then she told him. So he knows that I'm not going to be around forever.
For some reason, I thought you were going to say, I told his dog.
No.
So he was at just...
his daughter.
You just felt guilty, so you've told his dog.
No. It's a speaking dog, though, so...
All right, so Kat Carney on Instagram. Hottest bods we'd give a gold medal to.
Craig is also on Instagram. Oh, his is Craig Kinsley USA.
Craig Kinsley USA, not to be confused with Craig
Don't
Kinsley.
Follow that. You should really follow Kat.
They can do both, you know.
That's true.
They can do both.
That's a good point.
So we will wrap up the show now, and I will beg you to let me use your bathroom facilities.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Me too. After me.
Oh, great. We'll just all go over once. Bad news and good news. The bad news is that Craig has hurt his elbow and therefore cannot compete in the Olympic trials. But the good news is that he will be attending as a coach. He will be there coaching his training partner of the last 4 years. Kat has quit her job. She let her boss know clearly because she has quit. And she is waiting for Craig to return from Rio, where he is being a coach to his training partner. And then they will embark on their big suburban road trip journey. That will be happening this month, so I hope they have a damn good time. And I will hopefully meet up with them later in the year to do some canyons in Arizona. So that time of the show has arrived. Time to go to the website. Stop driving. Stop whatever you're doing and head to the internet. And go to gogetoutside.com/podcast. Look for episode 34 with Kat and Craig. And there you will find the usual things, photographs and links. Links to katcarneyphotography.com, her Instagram, her Facebook, her Twitter. A link to Craig's Wikipedia entry because as a past Olympian, he is of course on Wikipedia. Also, links to a 2012 workout video that I found on YouTube that I'm not sure he is where I have found, but you may go to our website and take a look at that training routine. And there is also a link to Craig's Instagram account. But bad news, the gay website that linked to all of the Olympic bodies that they most appreciated, that webpage is no longer up, so I cannot link to the bodies we'd give a gold medal to or whatever it was called, unfortunately. And since I know all of you heeded my words and stopped whatever you were doing so that you could rush to our website, since you're already there on the internet, why not go ahead and get in touch with the show? How can you do that? Well, I will let you know. You may email us. That is go@butcherbirdstudios.com. Or perhaps you'd rather use a telephone machine and call 818-925-0106. There, you will get our Google voicemail where you will be allowed to leave a message of 3 minutes about whatever the hell you want to talk about. And after you've done both of those steps, because I know you love to support this show, you should head over to iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, whatever you use to listen to this podcast, and make sure you have subscribed to the show and then rate and review the show. If you have ever stopped and thought, I wonder what I could do to help the Go Good Outside podcast, well, it's quite easy. You can go to one of those platforms and rate and review the show. It helps people find the show. It helps make sure the show attains some level of popularity that makes it financially sustainable. Next time on the show, Andrew Merrill. If you are a frequent listener, perhaps you're thinking, wait a second, didn't I already listen to an episode with Andrew Merrill? No, you did not. You listened to episode 10 with Scott Merrill, Andrew Merrill's older brother. So come back in 2 weeks, August 16th, and listen to us talk to our very first sibling to appear on the show. He's a cyclist and a flight paramedic, so he's one of those guys that flies around in a helicopter and saves people's lives for a living. So come back August 16th for Andrew Merrill. See you then.
Travel is great, but planning for travel can be time-consuming and difficult. That's where One Travel comes in. With One Travel, you'll find everything you need to book the perfect trip. Flights, hotels, cars, transportation, it's all right there. With One Travel, you can book online, via app, or even pick up the phone and talk to a travel advisor ready to help you make your selections. Visit onetravel.com/music or call 855-437-2154. Plan it, book it, live it. One Travel.
At Rural First, we're the leader in rural construction loans because we don't work here. We work out here. We live rural, which means we know just what you need to build rural. Our dedicated team of loan specialists works with you throughout the construction process. And with our digital tool, you can manage your project all in one place. That's how Rural First gets you closer to what matters. Rural First is a registered trademark of Farm Credit Mid-America. NMLS 407249. Equal housing lender. Loan subject to approval and eligibility. Other terms and conditions may apply. Visit ruralfirst.com for more details.
The most exciting part of a vacation stay at a home rental? Easy. It's being greeted upon arrival with a rusted lockbox affixed to the underside of a stranger's condo. Yeah, you simply twist knobs, click gears, jiggle it, and then rip it off its moorings, and voila! Your prize is a key to a questionable home rental and maybe tetanus. When you just want to get your vacation started by actually getting into your room, it matters where you stay. At Hilton, we deliver your key right to your phone on the Hilton Honors app. Hilton, for the stay.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.